I long to success because I cannot be measured so easily. Money and applause are too small a thing. They say fame is fickle, luxury is boring. There are things I want and things I achieve, but I hope life is more than anything I achieve. I'm holding out for it. The debt of existence requires a bigger payoff. I do not belong to my body because it's funny and temporary. It smells and gurgles. It whines a lot. I dress in white, and it makes embarrassing state. It's a bad investment, spiraling down. No man in history ever sung the praises of his body at the end. I do not belong to sex, because everybody does it, and nobody seems much improved. I do not believe in magazine covers. I don't believe your compliments. I don't believe your insults. Hormones are chemical, and beauty is bigger. I do not belong to sin, though some might say I do. God attacks my fears, but mostly ignores my mistakes. His forgiveness is what motivates. Sin is not the important part of me, and I won't respect it so much. It's a sideshow, tedious and tiring, and it will die away while I go on. I do not belong to me, certainly not. I am far too poor a master for that. I am a bitter slave tender, and I will not tolerate my own tyranny. I will serve something other than myself, or I am sold too cheaply. So don't appeal to my dignity, which is an act, or to my pride, which is a dressed-up mutt. Appeal to my love. Because I do belong to you, my life is about you now, all you people. You own me, each one. You are my freedom. In loving you, I am free of me. I prefer you, and am exhilarated, free from success, free from my body, free from my mistakes, because the only thing that counts about me is you. You will appreciate me or reject me, embrace me or beat me. You will laugh at me or praise me. You will listen to me or shout me down. You will honor me or ignore me. You will build me up and grind me to dust. But in no way will you ever turn me back to me. I won't go back. I don't belong to me. I have escaped.
Chris has gotten deeper since he went away. He's back visiting. After leaving us for marriage and Fuller Seminary, alas. So I had a person call me this week, as happens every once in a while, as I serve as one of the ministers here at the church. The person called me and bawled me out for the way I had been caring about her. She said that, in fact, I had done a really poor job, and that all I was doing was caring for her as a way to feel good about myself. That was sort of the accusation, just using her for my own ends. And I thought about it. And I think the truth of the situation is that she is partially right, at least, partially right about me. In the moment of relating to someone, I might try to love them well, but as we're interacting, often my thoughts are about how I'm feeling, you know, what my comfort level is or something like that, where I have to be in the next 30 minutes or something like that. You know, I do get quite selfish, and that's just shallow selfishness. You know, sometimes I do use people. For my own shallow ends, so to speak. Sometimes I'm only thinking about how I'm feeling, or what the relationship is good for on my count. And I wanted to start this sermon in particular by apologizing to any of you whom I've made feel that way over the months and years, if you think that I have used you just for my own ends, if I have cared for you without really loving you, if you know what I mean, if I have cared for you but not preferred you, care of you in a way that was not free of me, so to speak. I just like to apologize for that. And I also felt like I want to apologize for the Christian church in that respect. Because I think as a church, as a family in Christ, we do that a heck of a lot. You know, I think that we're often guilty of trying to convince people to be one of us without pausing to love them or care for them first, if you know what I mean. And I think we're often guilty of trying to change the world in a way that would make us very comfortable, as opposed to entering into the trouble of the world in order to love the people that are stuck in that trouble. I think we do that a lot. So if the church has hurt you in that fashion, I'd just like to take the opportunity to make myself the spokesman of all Christianity tonight and say sorry. That, in fact, is not what Jesus taught us to do. That's just what we often do. So please don't charge it to Christ. Don't charge it to Jesus. Because as it turns out, Jesus has quite a different approach to how we should go about interacting with people. See, Lisa, come here a second. So, visiting with us tonight. I think you've grown. Trying to be affirming. Okay, go like this. Real tight. All right, ready?
Ow!
Now what we're... Describe for us the feelings of that experience. Hold on a second. Describe for us the feelings of that experience.
That really hurt.
Yeah, but hurt who?
Me.
Okay, and that's interesting because my knuckles were involved too, but you're only thinking of you, aren't you?
I am.
Thank you for illustrating for me. See, it's human nature. We only think of ourselves. My knuckles hurt just as badly as yours. But, see, you don't learn that kind of deep character in seminary, evidently. Just think of other people. I have a question for you, a little mental exercise. How would you feel in life if you thought only of others? If you thought only of other people, how would you feel? What would your emotional state, your emotional status be most of the time? How would you feel? Think about that for a second. You wouldn't feel sort of Buddhist detachment. All right? How would you feel? What's that? You would feel a lot. You'd feel everybody else's emotions, what they're going through. So it might be tumultuous in that way. It'd be very, high frequency of emotion. Would you feel good? Would you feel bad?
Both.
Both. All. D. Pick D when in doubt. All of the above. Would you feel awful? How many people would think that it would feel exhilarating? That it would be wonderful to think only of others. One person. Okay, two. Two and a half people think that it would be an exhilarating, freeing to think only of others. Yeah, I'm kind of in that camp. I think if we could manage to think only of other people, it would be an exhilarating, freeing, joyful life, by and large. At least a lot better than it is when we think primarily of ourselves. Because I think that we are self-obsessed creatures. I think we all have a self-addiction. I think it's the most serious addiction in the world. The most serious addiction in the world is not drugs. It's not money, sex, or power. The most serious addiction in the world is the addiction to self. Most of us, I think about ourselves 98% of the time. Even when we're interacting with someone else, we're primarily thinking of, okay, how am I doing in this interaction? How do I feel? What's going on for me? Our life tends to be all about ourselves. And like any addiction, self-addiction, I think, makes us miserable. That's the quality of addiction. I think addiction to self is a particularly miserable addiction because it begins to take over all aspects of our life. We try to love other people, but we fall into thinking about how much they love us instead, right? We're supposed to love them selflessly, but really we end up thinking about how lovable we are. That happens. We try to be principled people. But our immediate selfish desires tend to take over. But the thing that really makes the self-addiction misery is that, like all addictions, the longer it goes on, the less satisfying it becomes. Yeah. I think it just makes us empty. We can never quite rest in ourselves, as it turns out, because, it's an addiction. We can never just say, man, myself is good. Myself is enough. I'm satisfied with this self. I'm set for life. We never say that. Instead, we can't ever quite feel like ourself is finished or secure. It's always hungry for more accolades, another day of comfort, some more pleasures, something like that. It's always nervously comparing itself to other people's selves. We're playing the status game. We're playing the greatness game all the time because that's what self addicts do. How do I line up? How do I measure? Here's another exercise. Assume for a moment that right before you were born, God came to you and gave you a choice of exactly the sort of life you were going to lead, right? This didn't really happen, but let's say that's how it happened, all right? And that means that the life you're leading right now, you chose, right? Everybody got it? You following me so far? Let's say that the life you're leading is exactly the one that you ordered, all right? Could you explain to yourself why you chose it?
No.
It's a definitive no. If you had to explain it, what reasons would you come up with?
Vision.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Vision?
Say more. That would be vision, period, not vision, comma. Okay, I like that. That's good. It's an exercise that I do every once in a while. I say to myself, particularly when I'm having a bad day, when things are going roughly, all right, let's say that I chose this life. In other words, let's say there's some sense to it. Always. Always. Let's assume that there's some purpose to this life that I could understand. What would it be? And that's a way that I go about making peace with myself, which is an exercise I have to do a lot because I'm a self-addict, right? Because I'm addicted to myself, and myself is always voraciously after more. You know, I try to tame it. I try to say, you know, it's okay. Things are right. And mostly we don't feel like that, do we? Right, mostly our self drives us to all sorts of ridiculous extremes. There's a Christian paradox in Jesus' teaching. I call it Christian paradox number 103. And the reason I call it Christian paradox 103 is because I lost count. But what do you have to do to be successful in life for yourself? Well, you have to forget yourself. If you want to be really pleased with yourself, so to speak, you have to forget yourself in life. It's one of Jesus' most famous teachings, right? He who wants to save his life must lose it, right? It's a paradox that we're constantly called back to as we try to follow Christ. Christianity is a very self-serving religion, but it's not self-centered. It's not self-obsessed, right? It is about getting joy and getting reward for yourself. But the way you get joy for yourself and reward for yourself is by forgetting about yourself, right? It's about you, but you're not at the center of any of your concerns. A paradox that way. To be a good Christian, you have to be a good lover, and to be a good lover, you have to be selfless, right? Because loving is about the person you're loving. It's not about you. I would die for you. That's the ultimate loving statement, which is also a self-negating statement. You know, I would give myself away for your sake. That's what love is. And to be a good Christian, you have to be a good lover. You have to be selfless. And the great joy of being in love, I think, you know, you ever had that feeling where you're just kind of swept away in love with someone? I'm married. I have to say yes. Oh. Or maybe you've had the feeling 6, 7, 8 times in life where, you know, even just a powerful crush on someone. I think part of the exhilaration of that feeling is that for a while in your life, you're not the most important person. And I think there's a freedom that comes with that. There's a rush of freedom, that you're actually thinking about what somebody else wants, for a while at least. And that feels so wonderful when we do it. I think it also comes with parenting, I found out. You know, I have 2 children now, they're both very young, but I've learned that as a parent, you kind of have the same thing. It's like, yeah, I would totally lose myself for my kids. It's natural. It's almost hardwired. At least that's how it starts. I look around the world, and I know that for many parents, it does not last. Why? Because we're self-addicts. Because eventually our self rears its head up and demands attention, demands feeding, and we get miserable as a result. We begin to be the most important person in our life again, and that just kind of sucks. It always leads to endless hunger, a cycle, like any addiction does. Even in parenthood. So Jesus makes invitations for us to be self-forgetful, as most of you who've been hanging around Jesus know. But his invitation to be self-forgetful, to deny yourself, I don't think you should call it a requirement. I think you should call it an invitation. It's an opportunity. Because if you manage to do it, if you manage to think only of others, you'll feel better. I think you will. I think that's what Jesus teaches. It's really quite fun if we can only manage to do it. if we can only give it a shot. I think that we'd find it's actually quite exhilarating. We get to not think about ourselves when we wake up in the morning. I like that. We get to not think about what my chances are of successfully completing all the things I have to do. You know, how I'm going to stack up at the end of the day. We get to not think about what we're accomplishing in life. We get to not think about our status. We get to not think about what we look like or other people are looking at us. We get to not think about that if we beat the self-addiction. That's nice. We get to not compare ourselves to anyone. And that's nice, because comparison is a sucker's game. It's endless. But we get to not worry about our own happiness, but instead worry about other people's happiness and to get joy that way. Bless you. So in describing this sort of selflessness, you're either attracted to it, you either think, hey, that's a great deal, or you're thinking, man, that sounds really psychologically unhealthy. Because if there's one thing that I think conventional psychology or conventional culture teaches us, it's that we as individuals should behave as if we're the center of the universe. It's what we're feeling that counts. That's really what we need to be focused on. It's really how we're feeling. What matters is how we feel at any given moment, what we accomplish, what we think. We are the ultimate reality in our lives. I think that's what we get fed by culture and the media and stuff. And then there's this problem, too. If you're living for other people don't necessarily treat you very well, right? So you can become a doormat, right? If you're trying to love other people, they can abuse you. And if you're making them the center of your life as opposed to you, is that really a setup for being healthy? It's very challenging. Yeah. All right, well, thinking of those few questions, we'll go into our text for the night, which you'll find on the back of your program, and it's also on the big screen behind me. And it's from Mark 9. We're going through the Gospel of